Welcome to Women in B2B Marketing, a show where CMOs, VPs of marketing, and all strong women leaders in B2B discuss their top tactics, strategies, and tips for building high-performing teams, leveraging trends, and ultimately rocking their marketing careers. Made by and for women, insightful for all. I'm your host and 15-year B2B marketer, Jane Sarah. Let's dive in. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for another episode of Women in B2B Marketing. I'm super excited to talk many things, but especially mergers and acquisitions with our expert here, Erica Morgenstern, who is the CMO at the new Personify Health, which we will get into. But congrats on a successful merger and rebrand on that. So excited to dive in. But Erica also has 20 plus years in marketing comms and PR experience and has gone through 15, maybe more mergers and acquisitions. So we have a lot to learn from her. Thank you for joining us, Erica.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I feel like you just dated me, but that's all good. Experience comes wisdom. We're going to go with that, Ro.
Yes. Yes. It's so impressive. We have to own our numbers, right? Because I talked about this on a few episodes recently, because whenever somebody comes on and it's 20 plus years of experience, like, they always react that way. And it's so funny because when do we stop counting, right? Because do we stop saying it after 20? Because we have to own it when we get to 50 years experience, like 50 years of experience doing XYZ. Yeah.
That's like updating your headshot too. Update your headshot, ladies. Please, please.
Yes. Own every ask. You're right. It is so funny when I get on a call with someone, I'm like, that you don't look anything like your LinkedIn pic.
No.
Although mine's AI, so I really shouldn't be talking. But Erica, if we can talk through before we get into just how you are the master of mergers and acquisitions now, if we can talk through how you first got into B2B marketing and marketing in general, your career
to
where you are
today. I am an accidental marketer. I will just own that up front. That I actually was really fascinated with public relations from an early age. Hang with me. So in high school, I was on what was called a teen board for a department store, and they were trying to get more of a younger clientele. So their head of public relations created a teen board, and it was high schoolers that would do promotions at the department store. We did fashion shows. I had a newsletter, and I was just so fascinated with this influencer environment. This was like pre-social media. Now I'm really dating myself, but still, I'm getting to the point. I was really fascinated with this woman's job and just how unique it was, and that she was creating these experiences to drive business. And so in high school, I was like, I'm going to college for public relations. And I did. I went to the School of Journalism at University of Florida, which admittedly I probably couldn't get into now. It's such a great school. But I went there. I went to New York, just like every East Coaster does, the Florida to New York migration. You're from Florida. Yep. You know this.
Yes.
And went into the PR agency and just absolutely loved it. And my goal was always to go in-house, but I knew I had to do the groundwork of the agency life and get that early experience, which folks, if anybody's in their 20s listening, that's when you do the hard work. You get that foundation and then you go from there. And I went in-house and I was hired as a PR associate. And 7 years later, I was a vice president. And it was because I really leaned into the value that storytelling could provide to an organization. And I became the person that they'd say, we need to talk to investors. Let's get Erica involved. She knows how to talk to that audience. We need to talk to a new market. Let's get Erica involved. She knows how to talk to an audience. And because of that, I moved into marketing and started really leaning on my communication and messaging to create moments that matter, to create experiences and to motivate people to take action.
I love that. I love that you built your reputation within each company for being the person that needs to be looped in because you can speak to an audience. You know how to build messaging and tell that story. That's amazing. I noticed too, when I was doing some light LinkedIn stalking, is you have an amazing pedigree of staying with a company and thriving and growing your career within an organization. I think, tell me where I'm wrong here, but there's a couple companies where you've been there 8+ years and have grown mm-hmm. and evolved and I'm sure led a lot of the company's growth to that point. So can you tell us through how, what kind of your, why you stay for a while and how you've grown your career and brand within the company to stay so long in marketing? It's so unheard of.
It really is. And also add to that, I live in Silicon Valley. So not only is marketing and Silicon Valley, I should have been bouncing every year, 18 months, but I just really loved connecting with an organization and finding new ways to add value. Even through the merger from, I'll talk to Virgin Pulse and I was meeting with the CEO and he was like, what are you looking to do? Because at the time they had a CMO and I was looking to exit stage left. Like usually when you're getting acquired, you're not, the marketing team is one of the shared services that gets a little ruffled, let's be honest. Yeah. And my response was that I just want to provide value. And so where are the ways that I can do that? And continuing to find those little kind of magic moments, even when I was at an organization and I felt like I was stalling out and I just didn't have a good feeling. I was like, what would make my role more meaningful? And I created a little group called the VIPs, and it was the vice presidents within the organization. And we started doing a monthly meetup, and it was an open forum. And we just took it on ourselves to think about how we, as that middle rank, could help advance the company a little bit more. And it just became like this core group. And there was a handful of us that just like really stuck with it. And when I look at that peer group now, a lot of them are in the C-level because we're taking some initiative and charting our own path.
Oh, I love that. So there's so much to unpack here. I feel like I want to go down why you wanted to stay with the company for so long, right? There must be something at its core that you loved, or perhaps it was the challenge of the different phases of a company to go through. And then second, just, I love that you created your own value. It feels like both of my questions interlock here because you created your own value to stay sticky, but also because you really wanted to and enjoyed the evolution of the company. So if you could talk through that a little bit, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. First part of staying with the company for a while, for me, it's really a lot to do with the people. Are there people that I'm learning from and that I really feel connected to? I feel like that's so cliche, but oh my goodness, is it so true. If I think about the last three companies I've been at, just the people are just wonderful, like genuine respect and warmth. And guilty, I'm in healthcare. So all of these people are passion driven, right?
Yeah.
Purpose and passion driven. So you're usually with the cream of the crop, right? Not people that are just phoning it in for a paycheck. There is a bit of a bias in that sense, but I'd also say that I think about my life situation along those paths too. My first job, I was there for 7 years and I had 2 kids during that time frame, right? And so there's some things that you also factor in outside of the company. That's like, my husband was traveling 10 days out of every month and I had stability and I found ways to grow, right?
Yeah.
Is one. And then the second part of it too is we're in communications and marketing. Change is where you have opportunity and you learn. My first job, I had 7 different bosses. Think about that. Like every single time you have to re-earn someone's trust, you have to find out where their job starts, your starts, right? You have all of that over and again. But I just really stayed consistent of, this is what I know I'm really good at. And this is where I can deliver value for you and the company. And every time I got a promotion. And that's how I started from associate and exited VP.
Yeah. It seems like you have a really good, I wonder if this is like your PR background or it could just be built into you or something you can teach us how to do. But when a new boss comes in, like thinking earlier in your career, as these transitions are coming in, a new boss comes in, how did you treat that? And to know what value you bring to the table, you mentioned, and you know what your strengths are. So I'm sure you were vocal about that, right? To anybody new coming on board. And just how did you make sure that everyone else knew what value you brought versus you only you knowing?
Yeah. Number one hack is, if it's important to your boss, it's important to you. So making sure that they feel well-informed and well-equipped and they look good, then you become super valuable to them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've had over the years, like so many opportunities to leave, but at the core and to just try different companies, right? So I'm assuming you just are really good at identifying good quality companies with people that you just want to stay around. How did they manage to keep you for so long through all this growth?
Yeah, usually I would have like a mental goal, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, Epocrates, which was an incredible organization, still have great friends from there. I knew that we had an IPO on the horizon, and yeah. I wanted to be part of that. And so for me, that was like a goal that I had my sights set on as a communications marketing professional, that I really wanted to be part of that story. And yeah. there were some bumpy roads along the way. Like we submitted the S-1, was on track to IPO. There was a market crash. We pulled back. And yeah. then 2 years later, went through it all over again. But in those 2 years, 3 acquisitions happened during that time. Wow. And for me, that was all like opportunity. Oh, like, how do we do this? How do you bring 2 companies together? How do you bring 2 cultures together? How do you combine the market and sell our offerings together? There's so many yes. how-tos that kept me interested and engaged, but I still knew I wanted to do that exit at the end. Yeah. And then with my next organization, I was like, I don't want to be a one-hit wonder. I want to see if I can do an exit again. And yeah. that wasn't an IPO. It was through an acquisition, but it still was through that process uh-huh. that I was really interested and wanted to be a part of.
So interesting. So have you been on this on various sides of a merger and acquisition? So being acquired and doing the acquiring yes. as well? Ooh, yes. Okay. Yes. So I want to tap into that. But even before we go down that road, I think you were counting, and it was about 15, could be more, mergers and acquisitions that you've been a part of and led many of them as well. From your first experience versus the most recent, which I'd love to get into too, what mm-hmm. have you learned and what can you share? What wisdom can you bestow upon us?
So from the very first one, my company was doing the acquisition. And so we were the ones that were going in and bringing in another company. And honestly, like, I didn't really understand and respect the other side of it. Like yeah. I've definitely learned since then that there's 2 parts of that relationship. And there's 3 reasons to acquire a company, right? You're either acquiring the client base, the talent, which is AccuHire, or the technology, right? Those are yep. typically the 3 reasons. And regardless of those reasons, there's people on the other side of it. And I think that's where like my empathy button has definitely clicked in much more, having been on both sides now. The first time it was yeah. very transactional in my mind. I need to do these 10 things. I do it for my company because my company is the one being acquired. And then they're just going to get tucked in. And yeah. I've definitely learned you need to have it from both sides.
Yeah. Especially in, if you're leading communications, the comm side, there's so many layers to it, right? There's the external press coverage, but there's also mm-hmm. so many internal comms, and internal being at the company doing the acquiring and also being acquired. So there must yep. be just so many things to think about that you've learned. Is there anything that you learned the hard way just by, you don't have to give super specifics, but like a snafu that now you would never do?
Yeah. Announcing a merger acquisition before telling the internal employees.
Oh,
yeah. Yes. And of course it wasn't my call. Yeah. We just need to accept some of these things yeah. were out of our control. But I think being less suggestive and more aggressive in yes. a situation like that would have been much more beneficial.
Yeah. And Nick, can you walk us through, because it seems, I love the branding, by the way, with Personify Health and thank the merger you. And everything. It looks great. And as a non-healthcare person, it just, everything comes together and I love the new logo. But yeah, if you can talk us through what just this latest merger and what companies combined and what went really well or you're really excited about here, that would be great.
For sure. Thank you for the prompt. Virgin Pulse is really known in the well-being space for employee well-being, making sure that you're living the best that you can every day, right? Getting steps in, team challenges, mental support, all of those are integrated in for Virgin Pulse. And then Health Comp is more known for health plan administration. So helping with benefit plan design and as well as payment integrity, like making sure claims are processed the right way. They're 2 really complementary items when you think about the cost drivers in the yeah. employer healthcare market. the two companies came together in late fall of last year. And my first immediate challenge was, does the Virgin Pulse brand stretch or does a HealthComp brand stretch? Like, you need to think about it in terms of, we are entering kind of new markets on both sides. And does one have the elasticity, right? I think of a rubber band to wrap around both of those. And ultimately, we decided that it wasn't quite the right fit for either of them and that we wanted to create a net new brand and really signal to the market that we are now a merged entity, that we are a new offering, and that we're really looking to mix things up. So we set out with a new branding agency. We worked with Profit, fantastic team. And we did a market assessment to really understand what people thought of each brand independently, of the markets, and really did our homework. And the one thing that kept coming out time and time again was the people. It was that they feel so supported by our employees, that they feel like they want to be seen as individuals. And it was just so human that when we were looking for a name, and we started with thousands, it's such a fun process. Even though I've done many rebrands, it's typically through an acquisition and you pick one of the two brands. This was like a net new. So it was such a fun, creative, methodical process that I really enjoyed. And we just knew from the very beginning that we wanted a human element to it. And as we say with our logo, like, the human's so important, we put it at the front of the logo with the little brand, a little extra at the beginning of Personify Health.
I love it. I think, did I read on a LinkedIn post of yours that you, I don't know if it has a gender, but your emotive is called Percy?
Yes. So you circle around the little wink with the P, we call that Percy. They, them. And Percy is just, it just brings it to life in a new way, a little playful element to it.
Yeah, I love it. I'm also, so you said it started around the fall of 2023 and everything's live now. And I think it was in February of 2024. Yes. So such a short timeline. I feel like so many times acquisitions happen and mergers happen, and it takes a couple of years before something's actually done. Yeah. So kudos on a short timeline.
Well, it's not done. So we launched the brand and we're migrating over the rest of the year. So like our end users are still using Virgin Pulse or HealthComp because we launched in January. We don't want to rip it out. But announcing the company and really starting to take ownership of it. Cool. Yeah, we're ready for it. But no, when I first started working with Profit, I was like, yeah, we want to be done by February. And they were like, I don't know about that. And I was like, yeah, we can. And here we are. Yeah.
And what made you decide to get the brand together first and then roll out these stages of the companies coming together?
It's just, it's such a great signal to the market of, here we are. Like, here's who we are. Yeah. And then also, I'd say that's number one, is you come out from a merger on the other side and it's really creating this new identity together.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it's also thinking about our buying season. So people are buying for next year, next benefits year. So you want to get that out there now. So then we're ready for 2025. So it really has a two-prong reason. Like, one, let's really unify the company internally, externally. And number two, let's click into the buying season and make sure that we are ready to rock and roll 2025.
Yeah, very strategic. That's amazing. It seems like your strategy was just very well thought out, both externally and internally. Get excitement going across the board, get the teams pumped to be a part of this, and versus just waiting, like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? You see something that's exciting, you're like, okay, this is happening. I want to be a part of this, and gets everyone pumped for it.
Yeah. Another thing I would add to you, Jane, that we did very purposefully, and I would definitely recommend this externally, is that I knew, like, at a certain point during the process, I knew we were going to go to a new brand. And there was a lot of murmuring and gossip within the organizations of, are we going to change? Are we not? And it was uncomfortable. It was especially uncomfortable for me because I'm a people pleaser, and like, knowing people are uncomfortable is hard.
I get that.
But I didn't want to take away without having a replacement, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to just say, yes, we're changing brands, because people have an emotional connection to the existing ones. And I have great respect for both of them as well. So I didn't want to take away again until I had what was new. And then they immediately fell in love with what was new. And like I said, it was a couple months. We even had our sales kickoff during this time. There was like in-person moments when people are like, hey, Erica, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, I just played it straight. I might've hid in my hotel room one night, but I definitely played it straight. And it really made a difference.
Yeah. Were you hoping that you would have the rebrand done before the sales kickoff so you can unveil it?
100%. We had the name, but we didn't have the logo and the design identity quite done. And now that you see it, you're like, oh, that's why you waited, right?
Yeah.
Like I needed people to see it, right? Not just hear the name, but actually see the components. And that made a huge difference.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'm pulling out a few lessons just from you talking through even this one story. It's like, just being very thoughtful and strategic, not rushing yourself. You can have a set timeline, right? Like you want to have this done ASAP, but if it's not ready by this week, wait a week so it goes off really well, because it's not worth jeopardizing the impact that it has by announcing it too soon and not when it's complete. Yes. And respecting the emotional attachment that people have to the historic brands too. Is there anything you did around that in addition to bringing such light to this new, exciting combined brand and doing it so well and it being just a very positive message and brand? Is there anything you did internally to lessen the, I don't even know what it's called, but the sadness of leaving one brand for another?
Yeah, I think it was like leading up to it. As I mentioned, we didn't take away. We did soften the ground that, you know, we are a new company and we need to start thinking about it. And and also the timing really helped us, right? Because by announcing it in February, January is when you do all the recaps for the prior year. So you still celebrated the success of 2023 with the respective companies. So that wasn't a strategic thing, but that's something that I definitely think helped rise the tides on it when we came to do the announcement.
So it felt like a natural next chapter.
Cool.
That's really awesome. So there's all this excitement with a new brand, right? Like it's getting people excited again, internally, externally. The flip side of mergers and acquisitions is there's a lot of impact on the team, right? There's duplicity in just teams, and there's people, unfortunately, not everybody stays on and there's changes. Mm-hmm. How do you lead your team through a merger when every M&A is so different? Any recs there for everybody?
Yeah. What I typically advise is that M&As are times to really lean in and look for opportunities, right? It is, to your point, very uncomfortable, right? Like you are always in like the limbo of, am I or aren't I, right? And again, you also said this too, but just to reinforce it, like everyone's different depending on why the company did it. Was it the talent, the clients, or the technology, right? If it's a talent one, that's easy. Obviously, they were looking for the people and you're sticking on. Yeah. But as I mentioned earlier, there's some shared services that often take a hit, right? Because you have more of that overlap. So my recommendation for marketing is always look for where the opportunities are, and that classic through change becomes something greater. Yeah. And we're still in that uncomfortable phase right now, right? Like we only just merged in November. And even then that's when we announced it and the teams are locking into place and I have two new people starting today and two new roles. And so there is still some, I don't want it to be like everything's sunny over here, right? There's still some bumping around, but it's part of the process. Mm-hmm. And so I just constantly try and be really upfront with the team. Like, hey guys, I know it's uncomfortable right now, but we're going to come out so much stronger on the other side, and just look to your right and left and see where people need help and just try and help out.
I love that. It's also, it's reminding me of what you said you did for yourself too, advocating and seeing, always asking, where can I add value? I think this is something I have not been great at in past M&As is thinking, okay, how can I add value here instead of just like waiting it out? Like
that's your first reaction is like, hunker down. What are they going to do? Am I going to make the cut?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily the other thing that I just want to debunk about marketing is it's not being an extrovert. It's not like a personality thing. You can be an introvert and have a ton of value to deliver. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure that people don't think that it's an outgoing thing that you're just like trying to find a place for yourself. It's really skill-based.
Yeah. Yeah. And have those conversations, right? Talk to your teammates, but also if you can talk to your boss about it openly, they won't be able to share everything. They might not even know everything, but at least have an open conversation about where you can add value, what your ideas are, not just asking, but bringing your ideas of where you can add value and reminding what your strengths are, because they might not know too what your strengths are, and reminders of your past experience that you can help with. I think that's a really just a great point to highlight that you've touched on a couple of times now. It's like advocating for yourself and showing your strengths and where you can add value. The very least, even if people are impacted through an M&A, it's such a learning experience. Mm-hmm. So you're gaining that at least as part of your resume. And now you've been through it. That fear is gone. When you go through another one, you know what to do better. There's so many learnings that come from it. Silver lining.
Yeah, and I would agree. And there's also something really fascinating about the market these days, that it's not an embarrassment when someone's let go. It's not like it's not something that you hide from. Oh, I wasn't worthy to stay. No, it's business. It's not like 90% of the time, it's not a direct reflection on you. Yeah. It's your role, or it's where the company's going. And like, people can be so much more open about, it was a transition time for the company and it was a time for me to move on.
Yeah. Yep. Owning that as part of your story and knowing what to showcase next time. So
And you still went through an M&A. That's still something that you can like add to your portfolio for sure.
Exactly. And it thickens that skin, which is always good in business.
For sure. Oh,
I love that. Because I know there's just so many feelings involved on across the board with mergers and acquisitions. But once everybody who hasn't been through one and you're going through one who's listening, once you go through your first, it's easier after that.
Exactly. I would say eliminate fear and shame, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those are the two things that will really be a barrier for you. And instead, so eliminate fear and shame and insert curiosity and growth. Ooh. That is what I would recommend.
I love that. Well, that's a episode title for today. And growth. I love that. That's a really good kind of wrap of M&As and what to lean in on. There's kind of two ends that we can look at this. If you can give any more advice on for leaders going through their first M&A, or really, even if it's their 20th, but just something to a reminder for leaders as they're leading their teams, and also anybody that's caught in the chaos and not sure what's happening next on the team.
Yeah, it's the classic communication is key, right? Mm-hmm. And you said it earlier, even if you don't know the answers, like, still have a conversation, right? Yeah. Here's what I know right now. Here's what I can share. That I think goes a long way. And then also what I've tried, my team will keep me honest, what I've tried to do too is like providing open forms. So after there's like a big announcement or something, I'll pop time on the calendar. I'll be like, hey guys, what questions do you have? Because if you have it, 10 other people have it. And I hope it helps alleviate some of the anxiety and some of the side conversations that can really become disruptive by providing that kind of open forum, open discussion.
Really smart. This is where I see so many benefits to somebody coming from a PR and comms background, getting to a CMO position, because you think through this and you have that empathy. It's just in the nature of a comms person, I think. But you keep this in mind, like, how can we communicate this to the team? What do they need? You think of that first. So that's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about, I don't think it's that common, but I need to, like you said, keep myself honest and do some research on this, but I don't think it's as common, right? For someone from PR comms background to become a CMO. Is that totally wrong? I need to get a stat on that.
I should get a stat on that too. I don't know.
I'm going to look into that. I'll check your show notes, everyone. Okay, by the time this comes out, I'll see. Yeah, I'll add a little addendum. But I'd love to hear, was that always your target for your personal career to get to that CMO position?
So my target was chief communications officer.
Ah.
I was communications track all day, every day. I am the wind beneath the CEO's wings. That was like where I thought that I was really going to just land and anchor myself. And just the whole world of marketing just really opened up. And I just really gravitated towards that, like I said, like creating experiences and really turning that messaging into action is just consumption. I was really interested in all of that.
Very cool. Thank you for sharing that. It's just, I love to hear different journeys into the CMO position, because I think a lot of our listeners are deciding if that is the right path for them, or if now there's the CRO, that's also an opportunity for marketers now too, yeah. And different just C-suites, different seats at the table that we can go for. Are there, as your team and teams across the brands that are uniting are working towards their goals, how do you keep everyone organized? Because I'm sure everyone has different, just different playbooks and different, obviously different tools they use. So How do you keep everybody aligned, especially during a time like this? But any kind of processes or anything like frameworks that you stick to?
Honestly, I go back to the basics of, does everybody have a job description?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I know it sounds so tactical, and pro tip, copy AI or ChatGPT, that is a great tool to write job descriptions, because There's so many posted on the internet that you write what you're looking for and you get this beautiful description. It's really short and just gives somebody like, this is my lane. And I'm not one to say everybody needs to be in their swim lane, but like It's giving someone their path and focus area. And then they know this is my thing. And then here's how I support another one. So that's something that I kind of have a weird obsession for them. Does everybody have a current job description?
That's smart. And do you encourage everybody to look at each other so it helps them understand like who to go to for different, for help with things and where you can collaborate with one another?
I should. I will.
It's reminding me of like user manuals. Because it's great for you to have that visibility, but maybe if you like make it, who do I go to for what versus like you're saying, like the stay in your lane thing, it just helps you organize and know who to go to for what, especially with new teams. That's interesting. I'm also curious if you've learned this or anything new about this as from the company you merged with too, is what's working right now in B2B marketing? It doesn't have to be specifics. Mm-hmm. I respect confidentiality of the companies, but Are there any specific channels that have just, it's been a crazy few years. Yeah. Everything that used to work no longer does. Just curious if there's anything that is working or that you've uncovered as something new that's working for you guys now.
Yeah. What's working really well for us right now is more third-party partnerships. And It's recognizing where your audience already is and not trying to create new airspace. So what are they already engaging with? Is it an event? Is it a media, right? It's a little bit more expensive, but it's such better quality than, like I said, trying to create your own area. And we're definitely seeing some benefits of that.
That makes sense. So I don't know if this is what you're touching on at all, but for an example is like, if you, there's a million communities out there, if the communities where your audiences already exist, you don't need to create a whole new one. If they're all doing great, you can just get involved with those communities and sponsor.
Exactly.
Yeah. So interesting.
And then once you're doing, that's when you create the uniqueness and your identity and everything like that. But you're not trying to get someone's attention and get your messaging across and have a call to action, right? You're fast pass. You're paying your way in with a fast pass, right? Yeah. On that first item. So you already are in a place where there's attention.
Yep. That makes sense. You're right. It just eliminates the need for a launch of something else. Just launch your message in something that already exists where people already are. That makes sense. Is there anything on the flip side that you're over that it just does not work anymore in 2024?
Yeah, the one-to-one marketing. So I'm not saying that that account-based marketing isn't where it's at. I'm saying that it's like more of a one-to-few model than really one-to-one. Okay. And it's just, it's the ROI on it. It's people's attention. It's the speed to get people's attention. Yeah. So people are looking for more of a like me model versus like, Jane, I want to get your attention, Jane. It's lovely people in red sweaters. Yeah. All of you should pay attention, right? She's wearing a red sweater, by the way, for you on audio. That wasn't as random as it sounded.
There's a connection there. That's really interesting. I haven't heard this before, so I'd love to go in a little bit more. Do you think this is because people want to feel part of that, like a community or a group of people. I feel like post-pandemic, we're clawing at that connection again. Do you think it like we're versus before we would have loved to be talking to one, and now it's more you want that connection with other people and affiliation?
I think there's that. And then I also just think that there's a level of mistrust, right? There's a super need for connection. I think you're totally spot on for that. That nobody, everybody's a 13-year-old girl right now. Nobody wants to have the one thing that makes them stand out too much. But at the same time, when you get called out specifically, there's a little bit of level of distrust that I feel like is permeating marketing right now.
Yeah.
So by bringing people into cohorts or like companies or like marketers, right, you can create, to your point, a community, but also a reason for connection.
Yeah.
Versus I'm targeting you.
Yeah. It has that ick again, right? When somebody is talking to you one-to-one, when it first came out, there was an ick, then it got normalized and now we're just sick of it. Ick.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're right. It does. You're like, where is this data coming from? Especially marketers. We're like, how did they get this information? Yeah. That's so interesting. We are more lacking trust nowadays. I'm curious, now that you've gone through 15 plus M&As, and we can confirm the number, what's one thing you would go back? Does not even have to be M&A specific, because you are much more than M&As. But what would you go back and tell yourself just starting out on the marketing side of things, just getting into that career? Is there anything you would go back and tell yourself that would change anything now, or just something you've learned?
Oh, don't be afraid of product marketing.
Ooh.
I was afraid of product marketing for the longest time.
Wow. Why?
And that's why I was honestly more of the communications track is that it was like, I was doing everything except for product marketing, was like always within my job of scope. And it was just always set up as like this technical role, and you need to be able to speak to all these folks and you need to know. And I don't have an MBA. My husband does. So I say I have the Mrs. MBA because I audited his classes, but I don't, right? And it was like, well, there's the four P's of marketing. And there was just like so much built around it in terms of this technical structure and like these guidelines you had to follow. And I was just like, I never knew it. I never got trained.
Yeah.
But when you break it down, it's just another way to deliver information.
Yes. It's actually so much communications. Like it's a huge piece of it.
Visual storytelling and call scripts are just audio story, right? Like it's all connected. But and I don't know how it got in my head or who put it in my head or how I don't know what it was, but I just had this arm's length to product marketing. And I just wish I had leaned in sooner to get more experience.
Yeah. I think I have a very similar thought on that, because when product marketing first became a thing, it also wasn't really in the start of my career. It became this new shiny career path, and it felt very hands-off. Like you had to have gone to some kind of special course and training. Like you had to go into product marketing. So when we had a product marketer hired, I was like, ooh, this is great. What does he know? But you're right. I always felt it. And now I got into product marketing the last several years, and it's very much the things that I've always done, just without calling it product marketing. That's so interesting. Very cool. Is there anything else that you would share with fellow listeners, like one last parting tip for the B2B marketers out there?
Oh, you even told me you were going to ask this and I'm stumped now.
Because it's such a wide range, like it can go anywhere.
And we've covered so much. And
we have.
Like, it's been wonderful. It's been amazing how much we've covered in such a short period of time. So I'm like, what is the one thing that I pull out from all of this? Stay curious, my friends. I don't know. Isn't that like a cheesy quote or something?
I love that. Also, honestly, on the same line that you're saying, let's stay curious. You also have a theme I've noticed through everything you said is that adding value, right? It's making sure you're adding value. And so being curious, and that's also probably what's kept you at companies, right? You stay curious. It's keeping you interested in the company. You don't get bored with the company because there's always new challenges and the evolution of the brand.
Yeah. So I would actually tie it back to how I was saying, replace the fear and shame with like curiosity and growth. Like in my 20s, I literally would put down like little acronyms and notes in the corner of my, like I made it small enough so nobody else would see it. But then I would go back and I would look things up and be like, I have no idea what they're talking about, but I'm going to figure out what EBITDA is and be able to explain it to my mom. Right?
Yes.
Like, those are like, that's what I'm talking about when I'm like, be curious and don't be embarrassed that you don't know it. Just go find out or ask the question.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's like a key that a lot of us are just like, oh, that's not my area, or, oh, I don't know what they're talking about, or embarrassed by it. But somehow I left that embarrassing quota off to the side.
I love that. You're making me think of my 4-year-old right now too, because he's in that phase where he's asking me like, Mom, how are tissues made? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, so let's look it up. And we always like, thank God for Google. We look up everything and show videos and we learn, because I don't want to make up how I think tissues are made. So we look it up together. So it's the same thing. Like, you don't have to be ashamed of not knowing something. Look it up. Now we have all these resources and ChatGPT. You can ask for it to be like, how can you explain to me how tissues are made for a 4-year-old? So you can.
I think I'm actually going to go do that when we're done.
I've learned so much about everything the past few days because he's in this phase hardcore. So I know about how a lot of things are made in our apartment now.
I love it.
But very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show and for walking us through so many good tips and reminders if you're going through M&A, and it's usually a very long process and there's phases, so lots to learn through it. Thank you for sharing your advice and also just on your career path and great tips. So thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you. It's been a fun conversation.
Yeah. Thank you everyone for listening. Also, if you like the show, enjoy the show, share with a friend, like, review. We know reviews help everyone, helps us get in front of more ears and eyes. So thanks everyone. See you next time.